Welcome to the Healing Happens podcast with your host, Avital Miller, designed to bring you insight and inspiration from health and healing experts to overcome seemingly insurmountable challenges. From former program manager at Microsoft to author, international keynote speaker, global dancer, and healing breakthrough facilitator, my goal is to inspire boundless energy, absolute happiness, and true success so you can live the best life possible. Enhance the power to heal yourself through natural healing techniques and through gaining awareness in order to comfortably, energetically, and joyfully live your passions. Hello and welcome. I am excited to introduce to you Dr. Friedman Schaub. He is a world-renowned expert in human potential and the author of the award-winning book, The Fear Plus Anxiety Solution, a breakthrough process for healing and empowerment with your subconscious mind. With his personal breakthrough and empowerment program, he has coached thousands of clients worldwide to overcome fear, anxiety, and self-limiting patterns by addressing the deeper subconscious root causes of these mental and emotional challenges. Who doesn't want that? Now, I'm curious, Dr. Friedman, how did you get into this line of work and make the discovery of the connection of the mental and emotional state to the impact on the physical body?
Well, you know, this was certainly a journey that started with my own anxiety that I was struggling with since I was a child for various reasons. Partially it was because my parents were fighting a lot, and partially it was because I felt a lot of pressure on myself having to perform well and being good in school. And, you know, and then that anxiety just continues to transform into becoming, for me at least, like this, you know, driven overachiever who only feels good enough when, you know, he has all those goals reached and all the accolades accomplished. And it was not a sustainable place of being. And once I was in, I started in medicine and cardiology. Once I had my first full-blown panic attack, which basically told me, what are you doing? You cannot be in this job for the next 25 years. That's not really what you're here for. I had my own, you know, awakening in regards to, I need to take my mental and emotional well-being much more serious. And I saw this then from that time on also with the patients that I was dealing with, that they had so many emotional problems that may have been there before they came into cardiology with heart problems or a stroke or something, but no one really talked about it. No one really paid attention to their emotional and their stress and their anxiety. And for me, it was just a question, are we treating the symptoms now here in medicine, or are we actually, you know, trying to address the root cause and maybe prevent illnesses from happening? So that was, you know, looking back in hindsight, it looks all much more clear, but this wasn't so clear when I was in the midst of it, because I also went into molecular biology for a longer time and studied, you know, the cells and the wisdom of the cells and how our body really works. Because in medicine, you kind of get a different view on what happens in the body because you focus mainly on illness. In, you know, basic research, you focus mainly on the miracles that really happen inside of us, and we still don't understand how a single cell works. So that brought me then to the question, how can our body and the trillions of cells really work together? What keeps it together? What keeps it really in harmony? I mean, we are billions of people and we don't get along with each other. How can trillions of cells in a small, compact space like our body actually make it peacefully? And everyone has a different job. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got interested in the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. Because the subconscious, I find, is really that intercessor between the body, the emotions, and our conscious mind. And And that's when I left Western medicine, basic research, and really delved into how can I help people to heal their emotions, their mental challenges, but also their physical body with the help of the subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you can help people overcome autoimmune disorders through working with the mind, working with the thoughts and the emotions that we are feeling. I'm curious if you could share one of those stories of somebody that you helped through this process and a little more on what you did with that person.
I guess, you know, one of the really, for me, most impressive stories is a client of mine who had an autoimmune disorder that was affecting her ability to swallow. And it was a swallowing tube basically becoming more and more paralyzed. And she was told that in a few years she would have to only, you know, been nourished with a feeding tube, and there was nothing really anyone can do. And maybe that was the first time in her life that she stood up for herself and said, screw you, doctors, I don't believe it, I'm going to find something else. And I believe there is something inside of me that somehow needs to be resolved. And for her, it was, when we talked first, a lifelong struggle with her mother. A lifelong struggle with just not feeling good enough, having to live really across the country to get away from her negativity, but still feeling somehow that the shadow of being constantly put down and constantly told that, you know, she's doing something wrong was looming over her entire life. And she was in her, you know, beginning 60s when she was struggling with that still. And the conflict at the core was a conflict between having the right for her to be who she is and having to be who her mother wants her to be, which is small and submissive. And so there was always this inner war, this inner battle going on.
Yeah.
And it's that battle.
I'm going to ask you something about that. Yes, because did she develop those symptoms much later in life, or did she always have those symptoms with the autoimmune response and having trouble swallowing?
No, she developed them later in life. It was something that, you know, you could say at some point when we are living in conflict for a long time, it gets transferred into the physical body. I believe a lot of cases with cancer do actually have such a conflict as the core of it. And autoimmune disease is just such a metaphorical conflict where your immune system is attacking your body, which is literally you are attacking yourself. And that's what an inner conflict is about. You are not at peace with yourself. And for her, just, you know, realizing this conflict and making the decision to either disappear, which is what her mother always wanted, or to be herself and come to her own. That was a decision of either I can eat something and nourish myself and sustain myself, or I'm going to be done. It's a literally a life or death decision. And she made the decision, of course, to live and to live in her own authentic way and to also have clear boundaries with her mother. And it was magical what she was doing for herself. And when we went through these, you know, inner subconscious processes of resolving the conflict and healing also the pain and the trauma of the past, and her swallowing got better. And after a while, you know, she really felt like, I think I can try solid food again, because she only could have soups and some juices. And so she tried one day a little bit of chicken and it worked. And then she tried a little pizza and it worked. And then she really got more into being confident again about her food. And she, you know, gained her weight back. But what she really gained was a sense of freedom that she never had before. And that is something that, you know, I think is just the basis of a lot of our healing, that we want to really find that freedom and that wholeness inside of us on a energetic and a mental, emotional level. And that ripples then also out into the physical body. That's something I think you know, is not only true for autoimmune diseases, it's true for allergies, it's true for chronic pain. And as I said, a lot of cancer, I'm not saying that I can heal cancer, I'm just saying that there is so much we can do to accelerate or support the healing of cancer when we are also at that place of wholeness within.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, there's definitely a lot of reasons why a lot of our health challenges come up and a lot of different ways to come to that resolution. And it's great to have this in people's toolkit to say, well, here's another option you can try.
Yes. And, you know, I also feel like that it's an empowering step to look inside for answers. Because when it comes to healing, and that is something that bothered me as a physician often, that people came to the clinic and literally left their power at the door. It's like, doctor, heal me. The medicine gonna heal me. That intervention gonna heal me. But it's not that they really felt that they had anything to do with the healing or any say over the healing. And that's the really sad place. I mean, I remember one client or one patient in the hospital. It was a huge hospital. It was a university hospital. And so a lot of people coming in and out. And one patient, she was this little farmer's woman who was just really shy, didn't want to bother anyone, and basically came for a heart issue. But I just, you know, walked through the rooms to say goodnight to everyone. And there she was. And I saw she's in distress. Oh, yeah, I'm fine, I'm fine. And then she had a burst appendix that she didn't want to really bother anyone. And, oh, I thought I'm going to say tomorrow, but tomorrow would have been too late. And that feeling of the authority of the doctors, and we patients, we shouldn't really bother the doctors. We have to change that. It's mm-hmm. our body, it's our life, and it's our healing. And doctors can help, but they are not the ones who are, you know, the governors over how we're doing or what our, you know, future will look like.
Yeah.
I can just keep on going with that, but I think it's an important mental shift we have to yeah. make in order to reclaim our healing for ourselves.
Yeah. And I notice people get annoyed often when the doctor isn't healing them, when the doctor doesn't know the solution. And doctors are not God, and science does not know everything yet. So we can't even put all of that expectation on that one human being.
So I agree. But that's also the fault, I think, of Western medicine and, you know, science, that they do play it up a little bit as they can predict. You know, you can predict how long you're going to live. They can predict the likelihood of you going to be well or not. And so it's a mixed bag. I know that doctors, I mean, being one of them, I know that I'm not a god and I cannot do the healing. It's really something that is a collaboration in many ways. But we have to really be more mindful when we're working with clients and patients to make it a collaboration and, you know, have a shared responsibility and not just putting it into, you know, the hands of the healer and then just no longer take care of ourselves.
Yeah. I love this. I was at a mastermind recently, a small group. It was just about six women there. We're sitting around the table having dinner and it just came up. Yeah. My doctor told me I'd never walk again. My doctor told me I'd never be able to use my arm again. I'd never be able to roll through my whole spine. I'd never be able to breathe again. Every single one of them went around the table and said something they were told they'd never be able to do. And they were all doing it in that moment.
Well, you can maybe also be grateful for the doctors who then probably pissed them off and said, okay, no, I'm not listening to you. I'll get to do the opposite. Sometimes it can be a good thing.
Yes, I feel that they're sent for us for that reason too, for sure. Dr. Freeman, I was wondering if you could walk us through a sample exercise that you might do today with somebody like the lady who had trouble swallowing.
Well, I mean, the first step in any process is to really identify what we are struggling with. And, you know, for a lot of people, they may be in conflict, but they are not aware of the conflict. Mm-hmm. And so I often give a little homework out where I let people observe their thoughts and what emotions these thoughts are causing. So let's say, you know, someone would come to me and say, I have colitis or something like this, and I am often very anxious. So I would, you know, say, okay, write down your negative thoughts. And interestingly, when they write down in the first go around their negative thoughts, they're not only just anxious, there are other emotions there. And that gives you already kind of a hint that there is maybe another conflict going on than just being afraid. And sometimes what you find is anger. And there is a, you know, frustration and irritation and maybe even self-directed anger in those thoughts. And then you have a good feeling of, okay, there are two parts, you know, on the subconscious level, we often talk about parts. There are two parts that are struggling with each other. And when you know that there are two parts, then you can also literally communicate with them. So one of the exercises is an exercise which is parts reintegration exercise. It's something where you basically, while you're sitting and closing your eyes, tuning in to these two major emotions that are struggling with each other. So let's say you're tuning in first with the emotion of anxiety that comes up, and you just notice where you feel this in your body. You become aware of where in your life this gets triggered and what the reaction is to the trigger. When you're anxious, do you feel like you have to avoid or run away, or you have to try to control the circumstances you're in, or you have to try to please the people around you? Just notice that, and then ask this part of you if it would be willing to talk to you, it would be willing just to have a conversation. And usually you get a yes, and then you ask as part of it would come out on a hand, like a platform. So you put your hands actually on your lap and the palms are facing up, and you're saying, so which hand do you like to come out, the left or the right hand? And you usually get then an answer, and you feel, interestingly, the moment you get the answer, the hand is shifting. It either gets heavier or it goes lower or it feels warmer.
It tingles, or like you feel a pressure on it. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. That's what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. So then you know, okay, the part is there. And then you connect to the opposite part. And it can be a part that is, like I said, maybe angry or frustrated. And rather than wanting to hide out, it wants to lash out. Sometimes it can be also a part that is, you know, much more expansive and say, no, I want to, you know, explore the world. I want to be myself. I'm ambitious. And the other one is much more hesitant and doubtful and insecure. So you just look for the part that is the polar opposite of the part of you that you just had come out in a hand. And ask this part also to show you how it feels. Connect to the feeling. Connect to the part by asking if it would like to talk to you. And then it comes out on a hand like that. Now, the process takes long, so I cannot go through all the steps, but what basically the gist of it is, once you have these parts out there, now you can ask them, so what are you actually seeing as your job? What's the purpose of being anxious? What's the purpose of being frustrated? Why do you do this? And very often what you find is that both are about surviving. Both are about defending you. Anger, defending you by keeping people on arm's length. Anxiety, defending you by making you small and invisible. Sometimes it's about pleasing, like with the woman that had the swallowing issue. She had a part of her that always felt like, I need to make sure everyone is okay, aka my mother. And therefore, my job is to not look after my own needs, but only look after other needs. And that was in conflict with her expressive, she was an artist, expressive part that wanted just to really, you know, be herself and unfold into her fullest expression of self. And so you can see that doesn't really fit together when you have two parts like this. They're triggering each other. Mm-hmm. And once you have an understanding that they just want to protect you, you go and ask them for what if they would not have to protect you anymore. what if that would not be their job anymore? Because these jobs of these inner protectors usually start in our childhood. And we are no longer children. We have grown up. We can protect ourselves with other means that are much more healthy and sustainable. And then you go to, so if this is not any longer a question of surviving, what would thriving look like? What would you like to do instead? And interestingly, at some point, you have an agreement that both sides want actually the same. And then you go to the level of how can they help each other? How can they work together? And what's beautiful about it at the end is that you lift the hands off your lap and you ask if from now on they want to work together, and they say yes. And the hands are moving together without you having to do anything. It's just like they're moving by themselves. I tell clients, don't move them, and they're moving anyhow, because mm-hmm. the hands are basically that that symbol that the subconscious is right now creating a wholeness, creating a resolution for this conflict. And for many people, it's life changing. It's not only life changing when the resolution happens, it's actually already life changing to realize that they have actually two parts that have been not getting along, and therefore they understand themselves better. Because mm-hmm. how many times do we are just shaking our heads and wondering, I don't understand why I'm one day this person and the next day that person. That's wrong. But then you understand mm-hmm. better why this is the case and mm-hmm. how to also, grow beyond it.
Mm. That's beautiful. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful exercise. It's very practical as well. It's very common for all of us to just often have two different sides within ourselves. And for people who are in close relationships and you're always trying to figure out how do you drive your life together, the chariot with two different color horses. And so even just to think about that in our relationships with ourselves, but also with others, and say, all right, how do we both support each other in where we are, and then move as one unit and create a sense of clarity of direction, so that, because part of it too, when I just think of it from my science mind, is like everything's moving, vibrating at a different frequency wave in the body. And if you do have these opposing forces, they're vibrating differently. And that's part of even what causes the discourse, the disease in the body. So when you get them to line back up and move together, then that's also when we feel a greater sense of harmony in the body.
I think that's very true. And I think it's important to understand that they don't necessarily lose their individuality. I believe very much in parts. And I believe that it's not necessarily the goal of a parts reintegration to make them disappear, but just more to feel like, okay, you are vibrating on the level of, let's say again, this client of expressing yourself, creativity, looking for what's possible, connecting to nature. And the other one may be more vibrating on compassion and empathy and sensitivity towards, other people's challenges and connecting on a deeper level. So both have their place and they can actually complement each other. There are many situations where maybe one needs the other, and then that's where they are weaving together. What gifts can they share with each other to make you even more rich? And since I work a lot with anxiety, I often tell people, when you really understand your anxiety, you also understand that a lot of your anxiety is unexpressed, unharnessed potential inside of you that has been just laid dormant because it was all about just making it through and surviving and not really about, expanding and creating and thriving. And so once you are resolving your anxiety, you will have such a greater understanding of what's possible for you. And that's what I usually see. So it's a gift to be aware of your anxiety, because it really shows you, oh, there's so much inside of me that I don't know. And the anxiety is the catalyst for me to find out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing I'm curious about, because, and I've never looked this up, I need to just look it up and see what the research is. But a friend had mentioned that he saw research saying that every time your phone makes a noise, it stimulates the stress response in your body for 48 hours. So there's all these potentially hidden things in our lifestyles that can cause anxiety, like letting your phone make tons of noises. And it's been very peaceful since I've turned off all the sounds on my phone, and it gives me a lot more control as to what I'm going to do in each moment of my life. You know, I have a lot more choice then, and I can choose when I'm going to look at the phone and respond to messages on it. And I was curious if you have thought of other sort of hidden things we might not think about that cause anxiety in most people's lifestyles in modern day, and what we could do to minimize them.
It's interesting because I feel sometimes, you know, we have to see what associations we are making. I mean, for me, for example, the doorbell is something that was very negative because it, you know, often from my childhood meant like that some people were coming and then that I needed to behave and I needed to be a good boy. And it wasn't really something that I always wanted to be. So there was, you know, for years, a negative association, but you can change your associations. Mm-hmm. I mean, now when a doorbell is happening, I'm actually looking forward and curious who is there. And it's a more positive, connotation with it. So just because a phone makes noises doesn't mean you have to be in stress mode. It really depends on what you associate with this. But I mean, I remember one client who always was anxious, but she had the most jarring, annoying ringtone on her phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, I had to tell her, you know, every time your phone goes off, I go off. So you really need to change your ringtone and having just like something more peaceful, like chimes or something like this. And yeah. And it really made a difference. It's a much, you know, more inviting sound in your environment, especially if you're focused. Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know, when people are coming home and they are turning the TV on because they want some noise in the background. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is it gets you out of your present moment. It gets you also subconsciously connected to whatever is going on there. And often it's the news or it's maybe some, you know, crime story. It's not very uplifting. Mm-hmm. So your subconscious is who really takes everything literally and as reality is constantly figuring out, are we right now in a war zone or in the kitchen or what's really going on? And that is disturbing. That gets you out of, you know, the present moment. Mm-hmm. And I also find, you know, I lived in Seattle for a long time and we lived close to hospitals. So there was the sirens and all this kind of stuff. And at some point I realized I have to have a sound machine in the room to over, you know, like something nice, like waves or frogs or, because every time a siren went off, you know, even though I didn't wake up, I'm sure my subconscious wasn't alert. So just being really mindful with, and it doesn't have to be only sounds. It can be also things you see. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people don't realize that their bedroom that they keep away from, you know, the public eye, everything else looks nice, but the bedroom has all the unpacked boxes and underwear on the floor and whatever. That is a room where your subconscious is supposed to get rest. Mm-hmm. And your subconscious is very well aware of the clutter and the messiness, and it cannot rest in it because every item has some energy and it will distract you. And those kind of things, very simple, can make a big difference when you adjust them.
Yeah, I love that. And going back to what association do you make with the sound? I travel to India a lot and there's a lot of noise there. And the way that they drive, you know, in America, we have very specific rules as to how to drive. So if we follow those, everything is in alignment. In India, they don't have as many rules about that. And what they do instead is they honk at each other to make sure that everyone else around them knows that they're there. Now, in America, when we honk, we're usually mad. Or this is a big warning, there's an accident coming. And so it can stimulate the stress response. And I decided on my last trip in India that every time that I hear the honk, what I'm actually going to think is that it's a driver telling someone else, I love you. Like, I want you to be safe. I want you to know that I'm here so that you can live a long life. I love you. I love you.
I love that. That's really nice. You know, I heard an Indian saying the other day, we are not driving in India. We are just avoiding accidents. So I think there's definitely the I love you, a very nice way of, you know, avoiding accidents for each other. But that's the same, you know, I think in Egypt, the same thing. We often go to Egypt and honking is, I mean, there are different kinds of honking. There's a friendly honking, there's a high honking, there's you are too close honking. I mean, there are definitely different ways of honking, but you're right. Honking in the Western world has a very, very different meaning than there. And yeah, that's it's a good reframe. But isn't it wonderful how we can really decide what we want to really take as a, you know, as an interpretation of what's going on around us? Because so many times we feel like, well, this is what it means, and this is how I need to feel about it, and this is how I need to react to it, and that makes us often feel more stressed and more powerless than if we actually, like you did with India, turn this around and just choose to give it your own meaning, something that actually feels good and maybe, you know, uplifting to you.
Yeah. And then the second key point you mentioned was about being present. And when we turn on the TV, we're listening to something that's not going on where we are. The types of conversations that we have with people, we often get caught up in a concern that's not ours. And there's times where it's helpful for us to have that concern because we can help the situation. And so then we can focus on the helping rather than the concern aspect. But it's to be really clear, in a sense, which things should we really be involved with so we don't bring concerns into our life that we don't need to be concerned about. And then the third main thing you were mentioning is visually the space around us. Well, you mentioned the sound machine in our personal environment, and then the physical space around us. And I have taken all of these trainings at the beginning of the year, and they're all about, you know, setting your vision, setting yourself up to win the year. And I've made these beautiful vision boards out of them. And I just, normally I make these very busy vision boards because the inside of me is very busy being creative. And so I usually just like splatter it all over because the information comes to me, right, from all over the place. And then it just looks like that on the paper. But that doesn't help me actually relax and be calm and be focused. So I let my mind have its splatter, but then I clarify things, you could say, in a more linear perspective of how I put it on the board. And there's a lot less going on. It's more focused, and it's a beautiful design. I have that by my meditation space. So those little moments where I open my eyes, I get the reminder of all these beautiful things that are in my life or coming into my life. So not just getting rid of clutter and removing things that don't serve you, but put things that we might call anchors that remind you of good moments, that remind you of what your goals are and what you want to manifest more of in your life.
And that's perfect also for healing. You know, when we do healing, just having anything in your environment that reminds you of healing or reminds you of cleansing or reminds you of, you know, being at peace, that's fabulous. I had people tell me that, you know, their whole sense of coming home changed when they had just a little indoor fountain that greeted them when they opened the door. And just that feeling of that peaceful sound of the water splashing, that just reminded them, oh, now I can let go of the day's, you know, emotional, mental, energetic dirt and just sit by the fountain a little bit and visualize to let go. And, you know, so there are many possibilities out there. Fresh flowers are wonderful gifts to yourself, not just to your spouse on, you know, Valentine's Day, but really something to yourself. It's just a very uplifting way of saying thank you to yourself. So just being mindful with what feels right like you said, that makes, you know, it's interesting because it's often not the subconscious that has a problem with, you know, like a vision board that looks like a color box. It's more the conscious mind who really tries so hard to make sense out of it. And that's when your conscious and the subconscious get in conflict. And then they're, you know, just basically there is a good feeling, but it doesn't make sense. I cannot really see or figure out what that means. And then the conscious mind tries to really squeeze something out of something that doesn't necessarily need to make linear sense. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like in your case, an uneasiness, so your conscious mind needs to have a little bit more a linear way of understanding it, then that works perfectly well to, you know, do it in the process where you first do the subconscious and then let the conscious catch up with it. And not the other way around. I mean, we need to, I mean, a big fan of the subconscious, obviously, but we need to let the subconscious really be a little bit more the guide in many ways, whether it's through intuition or through awareness that's not necessarily intellectual, or our dreams or feelings. You know, there is a wonderful guidance system that we have available, and our head, our intellect, is certainly underpowered when it comes to making all the decisions in life. We feel we should make all the rational decisions in life, but how many times do we actually go in the wrong decision when we thought we know better than actually what it felt inside of us? Mm-hmm. So tuning in a little bit more with that can also avoid conflict and avoid illness in general.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking us on a journey, Dr. Friedman, through science and then to the practical of how we can really apply this in our lives, how we can feel a greater sense of peace and health and joy in our bodies and in our spirits. I'm just curious, for anyone who's listening to this who wants to work directly with you or take advantage of some of the resources that you've put out there, what are the ways that they can get in touch with you and get
access? Well, the best way is just to go to the website, drfriedman.com. So it's spelled FRIEDEMA2Zen.com, Dr. DR. And also, I love my YouTube channel, because I really put a lot of energy into it. And I have my Empowerment Radio show twice a month. And mm-hmm. there is a lot of information out there that really can help you, webinars, interviews, guided meditations, to already be on that path of healing, wholeness, and self-empowerment. But I do work with clients one-on-one in the Accelerated Breakthrough Program, and also have video seminars that you can purchase through that website.
And just a heads up, I just got the date, I think, from your assistant. So we can look forward to having me on your show on April 16.
Oh, fabulous. I'm looking forward to that too. Excellent.
Yeah, I don't know if it's recorded live or if that's recorded and then it gets launched later.
I think it's going to be live.
Okay, good deal.
Cool. April 16.
Thank you so much, Dr. Friedman.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Healing Happens podcast. To take your next step towards boundless energy, absolute happiness, and true success, visit www.healinghappensforyou.com, where you can get your copy of the book Healing Happens, or sign up for interactive online courses to put the power of healing and success in your hands. Fatal pronouncements do not have to be your fate. Healing happens. The content in this podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or prescribing. Listeners should consult their physician on all health matters, especially symptoms that may require medical attention. Using this podcast's information is entirely at the listener's discretion. Healing Happens, Avital P.G. Miller, contributors and publishers of this podcast, assume no responsibility for errors, inaccuracies, omissions, or inconsistencies. Any slights of people or organizations are unintentional. Healing Happens and Avital P.G. Miller do not endorse every statement, treatment, and diagnostic approach contained in interviews in this podcast.